crazy here because my whole family was there. I had like 80 family members, you know, so it was wild. The energy was like through the roof. And nobody thought it could be done, especially in 30 seconds. He did it. Everybody was like, oh, you know, his family's like, yeah, we did it, you know, we got $1 million.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Biotropic Labs. We are innovators and leaders in competitive edge sports supplements. Enjoy this special podcast episode and help us spread the word. Have fun.
All right, everybody, we got Brent Stephenson here. Brent, man, let me tell you, I've seen you on American Ninja Warrior. I've seen you on a few different commercials over the years. A stuntman. Professional, I don't even know if this is a word, trampolinist?
Yeah, professional trampoline performer, I guess you'd say. Trampolinist.
There we go.
Yeah.
I had to clarify some of these things, like this one too. Are you a co-owner of Alpha Warrior, a partner? What is...
Both of those, co-owner and partner.
So,
yes.
Good, I got it right. World record holder, is that still standing?
As far as I know. Yeah, I haven't heard anybody beating that record yet. So.
Craziest world record I've heard of. I would never even try it, so... Props to you. I'm bowing down.
It's pretty random. I have a feeling you would try it out, though. I'd get you up there. You'd have no problem.
No way. No way. We'll talk about it in a sec. So I wanted to ask you, I've seen that you've been traveling a lot. You do a lot of traveling, not only for commercials, I'm sure, but for Alpha Warrior, for a lot of different things. Where did you start all this? Where did you grow up? Where was your hometown?
My dad was in the Air Force when I was young, till I was about 9. So I was born in Utah. We stayed there for about 6 months, moved to Texas for 6 months, California for 6 months, spent 8 years in Washington, and then came back to Utah and spent 16 years there. So I'm a Utah boy. So I spent 5 years in LA also, now 4 years in Texas. So I've kind of been bouncing around the west side of the country for a while. So
how old are you? I don't recall.
36.
Listen, I don't know how you, Travis Rose, and any of these older ninjas. Yeah, I know. You know about Travis.
Absolutely.
You guys do not look 30s, 40s. I don't even understand. What's the diet? I know you're a healthy eater, right? You eat pretty healthy?
Yeah, diet's definitely key. You know, diet, exercise, and sleep. If I can do those three things, I can conquer anything and I can bounce back from anything. But yeah, diet for me, I keep it super clean and pure, all whole foods. You know, I have my cheat nights, of course, but I'm a pescatarian myself, so I just eat fish only. No dairy products or eggs or meat. Other than fish.
What started it all for you? You know, let's go even further back. You know, when you were a kid, what kind of sports were you into?
I was climbing around on stuff before I could walk. And so my parents were like, we got to get this kid in a padded environment. You know, so they got me in gymnastics. I was about 4 years old when I started that. One of the best things they could have done for me. Gave me a great foundation, you know, for just learning how to use my body and also discipline of strength training, stuff like that, being instilled at an early age. And then, so I just loved anything that got me flipping around or climbing. And then I moved on from there to snowboarding was my next kind of pursuit. And then I added in the diving, like springboard and cliff diving, and then trampoline, and then free running and parkour. And then I went out to do stunts. So, and then became a ninja.
Ninja Warrior, let's go back to that. You were on which season? What was your first year doing Ninja Warrior? Was it the very first?
No, I missed the first season. I had a trampoline show scheduled during the tryout. I was super bummed. But the next season, I made sure to keep my spring totally clear until I found out that date. So season two is when it all started.
So you were season two of Ninja Warrior, or was it called... Ninja Warrior on G4? What was it called, actually?
It was still called American Ninja Warrior.
It was American Ninja Warrior. And then when you went over to Japan, was it still officially American Ninja Warrior just airing on G4?
Well, so the Japanese version, although they call it Sasuke in Japan, they called it Ninja Warrior when they aired, you know, the old school stuff on G4. And so what happened was they had a deal where we would just compete on Sasuke, and then they would just give G4 the footage, and they would edit it how they wanted to and into their series American Ninja Warrior. So we were participating in Sasuke, but it was edited as American Ninja Warrior. So
interesting. Yeah. Now, how, you know, they've had reruns on TV for old school Ninja Warrior season 1, 2, 3, and then season 4 really was the breakout year. NBC picked it up for the first time, correct?
Yeah, season 4, NBC picked it up. And
that was a whole different kind of a whole different process, season 4. Season 1, 2, and 3, correct me if I'm wrong, you had different teams. We had the Red Dragons. We had the, you know, all these different teams. Which team were you on, by the way?
I was a Red Dragon and also a White Tiger.
And that was season 2, Red Dragon?
Yep.
Who was on your team season 2? Do you remember?
yeah, let's see here. It was Thomas Hall, David Campbell, Travis Ferlanek.
Okay. I recognize guys, most of those names there. I like that. Who was that first guy that you mentioned?
Thomas Hall. He actually, I don't know if he competed this last year, but I know that he's competed up until this last season at least.
I know the name. I'm having trouble putting a face to the name. I'm going to do that later. I'll find him. How do you end up doing? So explain to the viewers right now and the listeners the process of this show, because they only took a certain amount of people to Japan, correct? You're fighting for a spot?
Exactly. So basically the format of seasons 2 and 3 were you'd go to Venice Beach for the qualifier.
One course, correct?
Well, same kind of setup now, but one course, you know, all the way to the warp wall is the qualifier, and then the second night is to the warp wall, and then the back half of the course.
So there's no other regional courses. It's just one LA course, and that's it. All right. Yep. And then how many people roughly were competing for these top 10 spots?
I think back in the day they had 250 people at these events. Yeah, so they cranked through it in 2 days. But they shot all day and into the night, so it was a different kind of story then, you know.
Did you like it better shooting during the day?
I actually like it just because that's when you're normally awake, you know, and so you're not being like nudged at 3 a.m. like, hey, you're up, you know, after standing around for all night on the cement.
Yeah. You know what? I haven't personally experienced too much of the daytime shooting, although Team Ninja Warrior, which we both competed on, that was during the day, is during the day. And at least in my opinion, there's a like and dislike. The like is that we're awake normally during the day. So yes, that's nice. You're awake. You don't have to fight the sleep. You don't have to change your schedule. The only downside is I've noticed it's kind of unlucky if you get that one, let's say in Team Ninja Warrior specifically, if you're racing side by side. You know what, let's keep it Ninja Warrior. If you're doing the course and you're trying to be the best you can, you're trying to beat the course, well, sometimes just by the way the deck is played to you, you know, that your hand is played to you, you have the sun just shining down on you at the worst possible angle. So you're going to reach for something, and you're like, I can't see it. So mm-hmm. I think that's really the only downfall I've noticed. I don't know if you could think of any others.
I mean, the course does look super cool when it's all lit up at night, you know, and then that allows them to manipulate the run order in any way they want to. So I get why they do it, but I really love the day shoots.
Now, so season 2, you made it. Your team made it to Vegas. I'm so used to saying that. You made it to Japan.
Absolutely, yeah. So they take that 250, they take 30, top 30 to the second night, and then they take the top 15 to boot camp. And then at boot camp, they break you down into 3 teams of 5. So was it 3 teams? Yeah, it was 3 teams of 5. And then you do a series of challenges. So when you wake up in the morning, what you do is this pressure cooker challenge. And each person chooses one person to go head-to-head, you know, on this challenge. And so whether it's, you know, going through a series of ropes and ringing bells or whatever they came up with, that establishes the order of teams that will then compete on the course that they've selected for that day. And then whatever team loses, they have to put up the two losing teams actually have to put up a guy on these, they call them the heavenly ropes. And then whoever lost that would go home.
How did you do season 2 in Japan?
So season 2, I made it to the cliffhanger on stage 3, and I went down, I think it was that first transition. I was pumping out. I didn't even think I went for the transition. Actually, I could tell my fingertips were just going. And then David Campbell went a handhold or so further than I did. So he was the furthest American that year. And then I believe there might have been like 3 Japanese guys that, oh, actually, you know what? Was it season 2? I think it was season 2 that Yoshihara, him and Rio made it to stage 4 that season. And then Yuji won, and it was just super intense. Gosh. So it was wild. Yeah.
It's like Jeff Britton, Isaac Caldiero right there.
Yeah.
How do they handle that in Japan? If you both beat the clock and get to the top of the tower, you both are grand champs, right? And you achieve total victory?
You know, I don't know if that's ever happened because actually...
Because Rio didn't make it up the rope, right?
No, he timed out. Yeah, he almost made
it. So it was similar to Jeff Britton and Isaac Caldeiro's feat, but Rio just didn't quite make it up the rope in time. You were the first American to stage three because it was our first year in America, rather. First American to stage three on the American course. How did that feel to be the only guy or girl going to stage three, being all alone? Was it intimidating at all, or were you really relaxed?
Actually, there was some controversy behind me hitting that buzzer, you know. So I hit the buzzer, smoke went up. I'm like, moving on. Awesome. And then some people were like, I don't know, man. So it came down to the producer's discretion. They reviewed the clocks, said I was good to go. And so I was sitting there watching, I think it was Paul Kesmir, and then Derek Nakamoto still had to go. And I was like, man, you know, I know there was some controversy about this time thing. I'm not going to feel so great if I move on and these guys hit that buzzer, you know, with time on the clock. And I'm like, you know, didn't feel, I wasn't on top of the world at that moment because there was that controversy, but they didn't end up hitting the buzzer. So I felt good moving on that I was the only one that did hit the buzzer. And so that was kind of actually in my head when I was on the starting block of stage three. But it was very surreal to just be the only one on stage three. You know, they're setting this whole stage up for you. And, you know, there's that period of waiting and you're just kind of looking at the obstacles, trying to get in the zone and trying to just calm the nerves. And it was a crazy year because my whole family was there. I had like 80 family members, you know, so it was wild. The energy was like through the roof. The support was through the roof too. You know, I was pretty good friends with also a lot of the crew, the production crew and stuff like that. So I had their support, you know, I had the crowd, my family. It was just intense.
The energy must have been just unreal there.
I'll never forget that night for sure.
Season four, you were the first American to beat the ultimate cliffhanger. And I could still see the video. If I close my eyes, I could still see you getting off of it. And like, I think you pointed at the obstacle and you were like, woo!
Right? Yeah.
It's just, it's imprinted into my mind because it's a moment in time where the impossible started to seem possible. It was a moment in time where just what you had done became an inspiration and something that motivates me and I'm sure thousands, if not more, of people to go and try to do the impossible. So you get to the hang climb, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get to the hang climb, stage three, our nemesis, my goodness, and you fell, right?
Yeah, it was crazy because once I got past the cliffhanger, like that was my goal. That's really what I was working so hard for so many years. And once I got past that, I was like, I did it. I conquered it. And then I was like, oh, I got some more obstacles to conquer here. So yeah, I got on that hang climb. Still felt actually pretty strong, you know, going through the rope junction onto the hang climb. And then I started to kind of pump out and I actually got to the last hold, but I felt like I was just too extended and I was going to kind of fling off if I went for it. So I backed down and right when I backed down, I was like, I just felt the meter just, you know, gassing out. So that was it. And that's the thing I love about obstacles, you know, is you can overcome these things. The ones that stop you, you work hard to overcome them. And then there's always going to be the next one to stop you. So it's just always making you become, you know, a stronger athlete, a stronger person with character and everything. And
totally agree. Yeah, it's tough, this stuff. But, you know, we get out there to try to do the impossible. And I think one of the biggest motivators for us, I can tell you, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you know, was to do the impossible, to do the things, to prove to the people that you think it's impossible. All right, well, we're going to show you otherwise. We're going to show you that it is very much possible. And it has been done. You know, fast forward now, season five, the year I came onto the show, season six, which nobody won again. Season seven, that was the big year. We had Jeff Britton getting up the tower, getting up the rope, and Isaac right behind him, which... You were there for that. I was there for that. Oh, my gosh.
Right? No, it was intense, man. It couldn't have been any closer. I mean, Jeff Britton, if he would have hit that buzzer on the first try, he most likely would have had the time. And
yeah, he was up fast. And you know what? When I heard stories that Isaac had never climbed that fast ever. So when Jeff hit the buzzer at 29 seconds and change, and you had 30 seconds to climb this tower to win the $1 million, I'm like, there's no way Isaac's going to beat this. And the Wolfpack, I'm looking at Noah Kaufman, and I'm like, Noah, he's like, Isaac's never climbed this fast. Ian's climbed close to that, and, you know, Brian maybe, but I don't think Isaac can climb this that fast. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And now, you know, we're all friends, but we tend to draw ourselves towards some people. And I think I'm drawn towards Jeff a little more just because I know him better. He's on the East Coast. I see him more. So it's not like I don't like Isaac. I love Isaac. I love the Wolfpack. I love everyone. It's just, you know, when Jeff got up there, I was like, oh my gosh. Come on, Jeff. You could do it. You could do it. I'm rooting for you.
Right, right.
And then I'm rooting for Isaac because I don't know what to, you know, he's climbing the rope and you're like, yes, no.
Yeah.
What do I do? I can't even believe this. What's happening?
All right.
And then he beats the time and
it was insane.
I still can't. I can't even. I remember Jeff's. I don't even want to remember Jeff's face. I remember Jeff's face. He was like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. He earned it. And he's
clapping.
He
was a good sport about it.
He was a great sport about it.
Yeah.
I would have just left. I think I would have just left.
No, it was an emotional roller coaster. I mean, God, it was just so intense. And then Jeff did it and nobody thought it could be done, especially in 30 seconds. He did it. Everybody was like, oh, you know, his family's like, yeah, we did it. You know, we got $1 million. And then, like you said, like even the Wolfpack really didn't think that Isaac could do it. So everybody kind of was like, we probably have our first guy right here. He's the champ. And then, you know, it gets flipped around. And it's just the emotions are like, what just happened? You know, but just so happy for both of those guys. And it was one of the best moments in all of Ninja Warrior history.
It was the defining moment in our history, I think. The thing that has changed the sport. You know, it used to just be about the kids watching and some adults watching with their kids. But now, it's so funny. I was just at Mohegan Sun last night. I was watching Pentatonix, awesome acapella band. I was talking about it before we started. And my wife's in the bathroom, and I'm standing there, and I have these older women come up, and they're like, Joe Morofsky? I was like, hey, what's going on, ladies? And they're like, can we have a picture? Oh, my gosh. And I'm like, of course, yeah, come on. And, you know, I've noticed this shift, and I'm sure you have too, where it's not just kids coming up to you anymore. It's adults. It's elderly. It's military. Mm-hmm. It's everything. And I know you're actually working with a lot of military. We'll get into that in a little bit. But with Alpha Warrior, which is awesome, by the way. Thank you for working with them. You know, I support the military and the vets and everybody. So
absolutely
love that you're doing that stuff. But it's really cool to see the shift because of the change in the history of American Ninja Warrior. It's really cool stuff.
Yeah, it's been insane to watch it grow just from, like, you know, the little gamer geek G4 days where really not many people knew about it. Maybe like once every month or so you'd have some guy at the gym like, hey, man, aren't you on that one show? You know, they didn't even know the name of it, you know, that like ninja thing. And then, yeah, I mean, it got a little bigger every year and then it got on NBC and it went decently bigger, but not as big as we thought it would. And then I think Mighty Casey is the one that really just went viral, you know, shook the world with her run. And, you know, the awareness just multiplied 10 times.
And you guys, you don't have to answer it if you don't want to here. You guys are still no longer a couple, correct? You're just partners here in the business, correct?
Yep. No, we're not in a relationship, but I mean, we're great friends. We have the business together. We have Little Mowgli together. So, no, it's good. We're very supportive of each other. So,
and as long as you guys are happy, that's the key there. Now, I want to ask, are you seeing anybody else?
You know, I'm not. Right now, I'm just kind of...
I was looking for those little dirty details, but...
I know, right?
No, first.
You heard it first on Joe Morofsky's podcast.
Right. That's right. Before we leave from Jeff Britton and Isaac, I did want to ask you, because I've asked a few people, who is the first American Ninja Warrior, in your opinion?
You know, in my opinion, it's very clear that Isaac Caldiero is the first American Ninja Warrior. It's always been in the rules, you know, that if there's a tie to the top, it goes to the fastest time on stage one. There's only going to be one winner, just like any other, you know, most other sports. There's only one winner, and it's going to be the guy that did it the fastest. And even though I believe there was a coin toss to determine who was going to go first, that's the way I remember it.
I think so.
So I think it was kind of the luck of the draw that Jeff got the chance to do it first. But he is the first man to climb that tower, you know, during a regular season, and the first guy to complete all four stages, the only guy to hit six buzzers. So you cannot take those things away from Jeff. I wish there was a consolation prize, but he's got the record to stand, you know, and he's earned that. But yeah, Isaac is definitely, in my mind, clearly the first American Ninja Warrior.
The way I've seen it, it's hard to explain. I'm sure you know everyone's having trouble here, and everyone doesn't agree on who the first is. Now, just like you said, no. For people that don't watch this show as often or might not know the rules did say that the first person up the tower in the fastest time, not the first person, but the person up the tower in the fastest time would be the winner of the grand prize. So, yep. Didn't matter if we had five people up the tower, the fastest time won. I think only because we had never had somebody up the tower, that's why it's such an issue. Because, you're right. Okay, the winner wasn't the first up in the allotted time. So the way I've kind of defined it, and this is my opinion, this is my opinion, clearly. Because Jeff was the first up, I say he's the first American Ninja Warrior. And I'm going to counter that with the rest of it. Isaac is the first winner of American Ninja Warrior. But the second American Ninja Warrior, if that makes any sense. So Jeff is the first American Ninja Warrior, but he lost the show. Isaac's the second American Ninja Warrior because he made it up the tower. He just did it second. So he's the second. But he's the first Grand Champ. He's the first guy that's actually won. That's how I've defined it. I don't know if it's because I felt bad for the bad luck Jeff had. Maybe it's playing in my mind a little, and that's why I subconsciously kind of chose to define it that way. But to me, that makes sense. But like I said, maybe it's because I feel bad. I don't know.
Well, no, I could see your point of view. To me, you to be the first American Ninja Warrior, you have to be the season winner. So Jeff was the first guy to complete it all, the first ninja to complete, first ninja to conquer Mount Midoriyama, actually.
So that right there, though, means that he deserves some title. If he's the first guy to ever get up it, how do you define it? And I think that's why NBC decided next year, season 8, to redefine our rules. And by their rules now, Jeff definitely would have been the first American Ninja Warrior. Isaac would have been the second. It wouldn't have mattered on time, right? If we make it up in the allotted time, they split the prize. I'm pretty sure that's what the rules said.
Yeah. And what would have been interesting is if they would have said, like, all right, I know stage three isn't timed or whatever, but you need some way rather than a coin toss to determine who's going to go first, because if it's coming down to a coin toss and say that Jeff got through stage three faster, then he should actually choose whether he wants to go first or second. You know what I mean? Like you said, these are the first two that it's ever happened, and who would have thought it would have been this close and this controversy would have been there? I don't think the producers ever thought that they'd have to deal with that scenario, but
totally agree. I don't think we even thought that was going to happen. We wanted it to, but we didn't think that was going to happen.
Not so close. And yeah, I mean, just the way it all unfolded.
I would love to talk about other shows you've been on. We can get into the stunting and things of that nature, your world record show that you were on. I don't know the name of the show exactly, but why don't we start with that? What was the name of that show?
So the name of that show was actually Guinness Gone Wild.
Is that still on?
I don't have TV, but I think it is. It was the year that I had, made history on Ninja Warrior season 4, but before it had aired. So I get a call from a casting producer, and he's like, hey, I know you're a big parkour guy, do you want to attempt this parkour record, farthest distance doing a wall flip away from a wall?
Over a car.
Well, that was done later on. I think, but did Tim do that, or did, was it Levi Muhlenberg?
I don't know why I've seen that video, but it had to have been one of them.
Yeah.
I thought that was you for a second when you brought it up just now. I was like, wait, Brent didn't do that, did he? But okay,
nope.
Yeah, it was somebody else. Okay, so you didn't do that one, or did you attempt it and just weren't unsuccessful?
Well, they decided that they didn't have room for it in the show, just the way that the show was going to be scheduled and structured. So I was like super bummed. They were like, we pulled your segment. So I was like, keep me in mind, for some other things. And then they called me back and were like, hey, we got this other record, and we brought this guy on to attempt to break this record, but he's so sketchy. Like, he, from 10 feet, he just like doesn't know what he's doing. And so we need somebody. And I know you're also a high dive specialist. Like, do you want to come in and attempt this record? And I was like, hell yeah, let's do this.
So they had you do a belly flop. Is this correct? From a 20-foot platform? What was the height?
So the original record, I think, was like 27.5. And I wanted to go 35, but they were like, hey, you know what? Let's Let's just, because they were really caught, like, worried about this whole thing. They didn't know how it was going to go. So, but I'm super comfortable. Like, if I knew how soft the landing was going to be, I would have said, let's go to 50. But so we went 20, I think we went to 29 feet, and it was just off this lift, like a scissor lift. And then just this little tiny, you know, blow inflatable pool full of marshmallows down there. But we did have pads under those. So it wasn't like I was just hitting marshmallows only. It was more just about it's a wacky record, you know. It's hitting that little target full of marshmallows. And I didn't know what it was going to feel like when I hit, but it was like a glove just caught you. Just those marshmallows just conform, you know, to your body. And it's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Wow. All right. So that's crazy, man. So world record at 29 feet. Is that, did you go any higher after that, or no, they cut it at 29?
No. Yeah, they just, you know, I'd broken the record. So, and it was a show. So they're like, all right, moving on. Boom. Next segment. So, and I'd love to, you know, I hope somebody beats that thing and I can come back and step that thing up, you know, and maybe someday I'll do it on fire, you know, be like the biggest s'mores dive, like a chocolate covered marshmallow pool. And I'm a giant graham cracker. Or something.
It has to be a graham cracker bottom, then the marshmallow pool, and then a graham cracker on your back. And
There you go.
There's the new world record.
Right.
Oh my gosh. You light the pool on fire too, and there's the s'more.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's awesome.
I've always wanted to do a few things in my life. I wanted to get a Guinness World Record, and I wanted to go to the Olympics. So I haven't checked the Olympic one off, but you know, Guinness record, I'll take it. So.
Hey, you never know. We're working on different leagues around the country. We know this. We need to get them to go international, have international competitions. Then once that happens, I think we can move to the next steps of having an Olympic sport, at least Ninja Warrior. That's what I'm talking about. I think those are the steps. If it can't be on TV, it can't be televised. Like, so NBC's American Ninja Warrior, it's not going to cut it. It's got to be an international competition that is in a league that I believe offers prizes.
Yeah, you can have cash prizes. You can have, I mean, you got to definitely rank, you know, you got to have a ranking system. So it's got an award for second, third, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, it's weird because back in the day with snowboarding and skateboarding, all that stuff, you know, the Olympics wouldn't acknowledge them and let them in. So they were like, you know what, we're going to go make our own thing. So they made the X Games. And to me, that's like the new Olympics. Like, that's the real deal. The Olympics is kind of more traditional style sports. And it's funny because once snowboarding got let into the Olympics, I was still kind of like, oh, that's no big deal. You know, the X Games is where it's at. But, you know, the Olympics still does have that prestige. And it's, you know, still probably the greatest games around. So
I'm sure it'll happen one day. Just hopefully, you know, you're getting up there. 30, what did you say? 36, was it?
Yeah, 36. What are you saying? I'm old?
I mean,
no, I will probably be a little old to compete when it comes time. But hey, maybe me and you will be announcing or something, commentating.
There you go. Know? I like that. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm scared about doing it. Well, I'm not scared about doing it, but I'm scared that I'm not going to have enough time. That's why I brought up your age there, because I'm 27. You know, let's say it doesn't happen for another two more Olympics. Then after the second Olympics, you know, they start really thinking about it. That could be three Olympics from now. I'll be in the 40s. That'll bring you into the 50s. So it can be done. I would love to see you out there at 50, man.
Hey, you know, as long as you qualify, it doesn't matter how old you are. You know, I keep thinking like, all right, I'm getting old, whatever. I really don't think that, but I kind of say that sometimes. But then you see like people like Travis Rosen, you know, one of the top dogs in the sport. He's 42 now, just getting stronger every year. So we have no excuses.
How do you feel now, let's say, compared to your 20s?
You know, I mean, when you're young, you think you're invincible and you're going to, you know, be the exception to the rules and aging and all that stuff. But yeah, your tissue definitely changes. You don't recover from injuries as well and as quickly. And then I've started to realize that I used to be able to just crank out workouts nonstop, and I was just, you couldn't stop me. It just wouldn't faze me. But now I'm starting to realize that less is actually more, because I have to give my body that time to recover. And if I overdo it, it's actually working against me. So there's, you find that balance, you know, you just got to listen to your body. And,
you know, I get motivated because I see people like you, like Travis Rosen, like Jeff Britton, you know, people that are older, you know, in the 30s and low, you know, low 40s, that still make it seem very possible. So I think what you said, it comes down to being, you know, listening to your body and really, trying to figure out what's best for your body. You know, everyone's different.
Exactly. So. Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's keep moving here. You've been a stuntman for a while, and that obviously has come from your skills in trampolining. So actually, let's start with the trampolining. How long have you been part of the Flying All-Stars, is it? Is that the name?
The Flying Ace All-Stars. Close. Flying All-Stars for short, yeah.
How long have you been with them? A long time, right? A few years?
Well, I got with them back in 2005. I guess that'd be 11 years now. But then I did some shows with some other companies before that. I think I started trampoline shows when I was 21.
Wow.
So, yeah. And then before that... What's that?
I was going to say, you started late.
Oh, yeah, way late. And actually, when I started with the Flying Ace All-Stars, it's a company full of a bunch of Olympic athletes. So I was like just plugged into awesomeness. You know, I was training with Olympic medalists, you know, and stuff like that. And I just absorbed as much information from them as I could. I actually ended up buying a trampoline because I was like, man, I want to get as good as I can. You know, give me all your drills. I would just bounce my backyard for like hours a day. And they were like, dude, you're getting good. You should start competing. And so I did compete. I think I started competing when I was about 26. I competed for a year. You know, I worked up to the highest national level. Obviously, I wasn't one of the top dogs, but it was a great experience because it made me just push as hard as I can. So I was training in my mind like I'm training for the next Olympics, you know, and I knew obviously there was very little chance that would actually happen, but it made me a much better trampolinist. And then that just gives you so much more aerial awareness as well and just body control and it. It's a metaphor for life because it's like if you can't visualize yourself going through this and spot all the things, you can't do it. But if you can't visualize yourself attaining any goal in life, you're not going to be able to do it. So if you can just break it down into little baby steps and see yourself doing each of those and train to complete those, it's just like...
You've brought those skills along with your gymnastics, along with everything else you were doing... Actually, what other sports do you say you did growing up? You did gymnastics. Did you do anything else? Did you ever play soccer, basketball, baseball?
When I was a kid, you know, just little leagues here and there. But I did play soccer in high school. I kind of slept quite a bit, so I didn't have the grades. So it was kind of – I would practice with the team, and then I'd sit on the bench and watch at the games. It was kind of frustrating. And same with diving. I was also a very good diver, but my scores wouldn't count toward the competition. But I still just loved training, being a part of those sports. But it's funny because like each one kind of helped me better at the other one. You know, gymnastics gave me a very well-rounded ability to use my body. But I was really drawn to the acrobatics a lot. So before I started trampling, I was diving. And so a lot of the breakdowns and visualization are the same. So it translated really well. And then, you know, that aerial awareness really helped. Well, the snowboarding as well, you know, I was really into, you know, going off the big jumps and the rails, all that stuff. So just all, it's all just, you know, aerial awareness and it translates well to being in ninjas and all that stuff and the parkour. And
you use your trampoline skills and all the other skills you have to become a stuntman. You've done some pretty impressive movies, TV shows. Correct me if I'm wrong there. Nate, why don't you name some of the movies you've been on for the people listening?
Well, I guess some of the more recent ones are Maze Runner 2, Mall Cop 2, After Earth with Will Smith. Yeah, so those are probably... three of the bigger, most recent projects that I had worked on. When I moved to Texas to help blow off Warrior Up, I kind of put stunts on the back burner somewhat. So I still have, you know, I think I want to return to that at some point and really charge it hard because I've always wanted to do a role like, you know, Spider-Man or double one of those guys and just like, you know, that's the childhood dream right there.
I heard you say you're in Texas now. In San Antonio?
Yeah, San Antonio, Texas.
Okay, and that's home of Alpha Warrior, right? Is this where Alpha Warrior is?
Well, Alpha Warrior's gone through some evolution. At first, we were a traveling event series, and so we have this giant still obstacle course, and we would go from city to city. But we decided that instead of paying all this crazy money to ship this giant course around and only be able to do one event in each city, let's develop permanent event facilities across the nation. So San Antonio is our first major event facility. We want to do 5 or 6, spread them out across the U.S., and then develop the training facilities around that, so around those.
And that's still the plan, right?
Still the plan. Yep. And our first event's November 19th and 20th coming up here in San Antonio. And so, yeah. Come play if you guys are around.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time, Alpha Warrior, and I'm so excited to see its future. You know, it's got a lot of potential. And they have great owners, right? You and Casey, you guys are top notch, and certainly can bring that to be not just a nationwide thing, but I'm sure if it was successful enough, which it very much can be, you know, the sky's the limit there, which is really cool.
Yeah, we want to be the UFC of the obstacle world, basically. So, yeah.
What's your workout routine like? Now, you know, having day-to-day things always changing, not having a set schedule, if correct me if I'm wrong there, right? You don't really have a set schedule. It's always changing. Do you have certain days that you like to go work out, or do you just go as often as you can, or as, you know, whenever you can? You know, what's your workout routine like right now?
So I've been religious with my strength training workouts for, God, as long as I can remember. So, I mean, I just go crazy if I don't get that in. That's like my foundation. That develops my body and allows me to do everything that I can do. I kind of look at it like the strength training is learning how to write letters, you know, and you got to strengthen your ability to write those letters. Once you can write letters, then you can do the activity training, which is the obstacle. So if you got to make sure you have all the right, you know, strength, all the right muscles strengthened in the right way to allow you to orchestrate through those different movements and stuff. So my strength training, I do probably about 4 to 6 days a week. And it's a program that I can do anywhere. I don't have any, you know, the only weights that I ever use are a weight vest. All I need is a pull-up bar and maybe a little dip station and a stair, and I can just get it all done. So you can find that on the road anywhere. So, I do the strength training about 4 to 6 days a week for about an hour, and then, do different activity training, whether that's obstacles or mountain biking or skateboarding or rock climbing. Probably do that at least four days a week for another 2 hours a day or so. So, and it just depends on where I am, you know, cause literally I'm on the road more than I am here. So if there's like a rock climbing gym in the area, you know, I'll bring my shoes on the road with me to do some rock climbing. Or if I'm driving to the event, I'll bring my mountain bike, you know, so if I have a little window, I can get out, get some good cardio in. So, yeah, I mean, I just got to do what you can when you can, and you can't fall behind, you know.
What are you climbing right now? I'm guessing bouldering is mainly what you do, or do you do top rope, lead climbing, anything like that?
You know, I'm just now getting back into the climbing because you know how it is. If you, you know, take 2 weeks off, you come back and you just feel so weak. So we were really good about it a while back, but I haven't been doing it for a while. So I'm just getting back into it. The bouldering, I'm probably like a V4, V5, nothing crazy. But I do like doing a lot of like top roping and a little bit of lead climbing. So I'm probably like a 5'11 to 5'12.
The endurance is all you really need. That's what it's all about. And that's why rock climbers are generally favored for our course when it comes down to that final stage before the final rope climb.
It was crazy because early on, the parkour guys were the ones just dominating because they had the agility. And then they'd get to stage three, but they didn't have the grip strength. The rock climbers, it takes a lot longer to develop that tissue density and tendon density than it does to get the agility if you're kind of talented in that way. You just haven't unlocked that yet. So the rock climbers came in, but they weren't making it to stage three, you know, but then they started focusing more on the parkour and the agility stuff. And so they started getting to stage three. And then obviously, as we've seen, once they're there, then it's over. You know, there's probably at least 10 plus people that I know are totally capable of completing all four stages. But, you know, I trip down the sidewalk walking every day, you know, so it's like things happen. And as we saw with Jeff Britton, you know, that was another defining moment of the sport. One of the first, well, the first guy to complete all four stages goes down on the first obstacle in finals. And I mean, that's how it goes. You just, you know, I would be just blown away if the same person conquered Mount Medoria two seasons in a row. They would be just super, like superhuman.
That's unheard of. We've never had anyone ever beat it 2 years in a row. Not even Yuji, right? Out of Japan.
No.
He's never done it twice. He's done it twice, but he's never won twice in a row. So what are your plans for the future of American Ninja Warrior? Your future on American Ninja Warrior? Do you plan on coming back as long as your body allows you, as long as they allow you. I'm guessing
all of the above. Absolutely. It's a huge part of my life. You know, it's like Christmas these days. It just comes around once a year. You know, I love it because more than anything, just the community is awesome. Just being around people that are pursuing their dreams and working hard and staying healthy and fit. I love being a part of that. And I just love seeing, you know, how far I can get through this course, you know, every year. Sometimes I'm a little more prepared than others, but I'm like, here we go. You know, let's see how it goes with the whatever shape I'm in right now. And, you know, it does get harder to train as you get busier. And I couldn't imagine people like Travis Rosen with a family and a career. I don't know how he finds the time to do all this stuff. But, yeah, I mean, some years you're ready, more ready than others. But I just love being a part of the whole thing. And I'll keep doing it as long as it's around. So,
what social media handles do you want to throw out there for us? Where can we find you?
Yeah, you can just find me at Brent Stephenson or all my social media handles. My last name's Steffensen. So on the Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, just look me up. You'll find me.
All right, man. Well, listen, it's been awesome having you on the podcast here. A really good friend of mine. I'm glad you decided to give us your time and tell us your story. It's been great. I'll see you later, my man.
Later, Joe Morofsky, the weatherman, the legend.
Talk to you later, man.
Take it easy, bro. Thanks for having me on.